This episode is brought to you by Odmo's Pizza in Cambie. Handmade awesome pizza plus craft beer, wine, and cider. Delivered. Call them today at 503-263-8444.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Cambie,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Welcome to the Now Hear This, Cambie podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Martina Baker, and this is what's happening this week in our community. The last of the pandemic limits Oregonians have endured for more than 2 years is ending, with state authorities lifting mask requirements by Friday, March 19th, and the governor's statewide COVID-19 emergency declaration ending April 1st, state officials announced on Thursday. That means that this spring, life in Oregon will officially be back to normal. Though the virus is not going away, the announcements indicate that state officials believe it is time for Oregonians to live with the risk of COVID the same way they cope with influenza or cold viruses. Lifting Oregon's COVID-19 emergency declaration today does not mean that the pandemic is over or that COVID-19 is no longer a significant concern, Governor Kate Brown said in a statement. But, as we have shown through the Delta and Omicron surges, as we learn to live with this virus and with so many Oregonians protected by safe and effective vaccines, we can now protect ourselves, our friends, and our families without invoking the extraordinary emergency authorities that were necessary at the beginning of the pandemic. Masks won't be required in either schools or indoor public places after March 19th, about 2 weeks earlier than expected. The Oregon Health Authority had set March 31st as the end date, but said if hospitalizations of people with COVID dropped to 400 sooner, it would lift the indoor mask mandate sooner. The Health Authority said in a statement Thursday that hospitalizations are expected to reach 400 by March 20th. That is based on the latest forecast from the Oregon Health and Science University, the agency said in its release. The statement said that preparations in schools were advancing more quickly than expected, which allowed the state to lift the mandate earlier than March 31st. The Cambie School District on Thursday confirmed that it too would make masks optional for students, staff, and visitors starting March 19th after the statewide mandate is lifted. The district had previously announced it would make the same move at the end of March. Most Oregonians are not likely to notice the end of the governor's state of emergency. The emergency order, put in place on June 30th, provided the state flexibility to respond to the pandemic by mobilizing volunteer medical professionals, including many who are retired in hospitals. The order also gave the state the ability to loosen medical license standards to bring in more nurses, for example. And it gave Oregon access to emergency federal funds, including enhanced benefits for people receiving food assistance. Most of the governor's executive orders on COVID were rescinded last year. Brown did mobilize the Oregon National Guard again in January, deploying 1,200 troops to 40 hospitals and medical centers around the state. They were mobilized for 90 days. Masks will be required at the Molalla River School District until at least March 19th, after the board voted on Wednesday to reverse this decision from the previous week. At a February 17th work session, the board had passed a resolution making masks optional for staff, students, and visitors starting March 3rd. But at a work session the following week, They reversed course, citing numerous complaints the district had received, as well as several serious and largely unforeseen financial, legal, labor, and health-related repercussions that have resulted or are being threatened if they move forward with disregarding state guidelines. Superintendent Tony Mann began this week's meeting by reiterating that he had and urged against flouting the state's mask rules. My recommendation has been based and continues to be based not on fear of repercussions or the loss of elementary and secondary school emergency relief funds or the nature of community sentiment, Mann said. My recommendation has been based solely on the fact that we're an organization that follows the law. Our students and future generations deserve to learn and thrive in school environments with order, and the rule of law provides for this. As I've said many times in board meetings and elsewhere, we can't pick and choose what rules and laws we follow. The Molalla River School District and board had received stern letters from the Oregon Department of Education, Oregon Health Authority, and the local teachers' union threatening fines, loss of funding, and other possible fallout. The district could lose access to an estimated $3 million in reimbursement from federal coronavirus relief funds, while OHA said Molalla schools could face fines of up to $500 per violation per day for disregarding the state's mask or vaccine rules. Jeff Claxton, president of the Molalla River Education Association, wrote that the organization had grave concerns about the board's decision to lift the mask mandate early, saying it may violate the district's collective bargaining agreement with the union and place teachers in an impossible ethical quandary. No board members appeared to be in favor of the mask mandate or the state's coronavirus restrictions, which have been among the strictest in the nation. The board decreed the negative effects the past 12 months of masked in-person instruction has had on children who are, for the most part, at low risk for serious complications from the virus. I feel that the children are being psychologically tortured with the masks, Director Linda Eskridge said. I believe the governor and the government have done a lot of overreaching and they're tired of it. I'm tired of it. But while board members felt pushback was needed, some questioned whether this was the right way to do it. If the district lost millions in funding, Vice Chair Neil Lucht reasoned, then it would be students paying the price for the board's defiance. For me, it's the whole idea of using our kids to try and beat back the state, he said. These dollars are really for our kids in this district to keep them healthy and sane and as safe as we possibly can as we're dealing with this crisis. I agree with everything that's been said about government overreach. I just don't think we're using the right weapon and tool. The popular annual Slice of Summer Concert Series has set a robust lineup for this year's edition at the Waite Park Gazebo, though it may need to be trimmed if organizers don't receive needed financial support from the community soon. This year's lineup includes local favorites, the Band of Jesse James, July 10th, the ever-popular Thrill Ride on July 24th, the big band stylings of Stump City Soul on August 7th, and classic rock groove band Generator on August 21st. But, as coordinator Lisa Lair explained, the nonprofit concert series is especially in need of donations and sponsorships this year as it recovers from the pandemic shutdowns. COVID has been a challenge along with everything else, but we are still here and going strong, Lair said. We are continuing to expand and attract newer and quality musicians. But fundraising is an ongoing struggle, she admitted. The concerts are and always have been free to attend, but they are certainly not free to put on, and the cost of talent and sound production services is rising. We are hurting this year and are about $3,000 short of what we need to put on all four concerts, Lear said. We need a miracle. But the community has always come through to support this wonderful local event, so we are optimistic. Lear said the team is thankful to all who have already supported the series, including Canby Builder Supply, which donated plywood to build a new stage this year. Slice was one of the first major local events to return after the pandemic last year, presenting two concerts to larger than expected crowds. The board hopes to double that output this year. We're looking forward to fewer COVID restrictions this year, which I hope will result in a larger crowd, Lear said. We are an outside event with plenty of space, so we're hoping everyone feels safe to come out and enjoy great music and the fun of coming together as a community again. Slice of Summer has been a staple of the Canby community for more than three decades. After the event lapsed in 2017, it was brought back by a dedicated group of volunteers under the nonprofit umbrella of the Canby Livability Coalition. For more information or to make a donation, visit sliceofsummer.com. The Canby Area Chamber of Commerce is again partnering with local businesses and city officials to present the Mayor's State of the City and Small Business Showcase, a dual event that was successfully piloted in February 2020, a few weeks before the pandemic hit Oregon. COVID-19 derailed the 2021 edition of the event, but now it's back and will be presented from 5 to 8 p.m. Thursday, March 3rd, at the beautiful Antonia Ballroom above the Backstop Bar and Grill in downtown Canby. The event will offer a chance to taste and browse offerings from local businesses and hear from Mayor Brian Hodson as he gives us a civic update on the city, Chamber CEO Lori Tarter said. Come to discover what local small businesses have to offer with demonstrations, tastings, giveaways, and more. Like the 2020 edition, this year's event will start with a meet and greet with local businesses. Tarter said at least 15 businesses will be part of the showcase, including a Family Tradition Cleaning Services LLC, Better Homes and Gardens Realty Partners, Canby Living Magazine and Advantage Media, Canby Smiles, and Canby Christian Church. The Clackamas Federal Credit Union, Dix Canby Ford, Ellison Team Homes Keller Williams Realty, FOB Taproom, Health Marks Insurance Agency, King's Farm to Table Canby Market, Northwest Employment Solutions, PacWest Wealth Partners, and the Book Nook will also be there to join the fun. Doors open for the free event at 5 p.m., with the main programming, including Mayor Hodson's remarks, set to get underway at 7. Cougar Country Hometown Sports Coverage is brought to you by Rife and Hunsaker PC. When you need an attorney, turn to the firm Canby has trusted for over 50 years. Call them today at 503-266-3456. For the latest sports news, follow us on Twitter at Cougar Country OR and Instagram at Cougar Country POD. While the strong group of Cougars boys wrestlers have been making waves around the state for their strong play, the wrestling success for Canby does not stop there. After becoming the lone Cougar girl wrestler to qualify, senior Lexley Lopez-Zariaga placed sixth in the state tournament last week. She had punched her ticket to states by placing third at the Three Rivers League District Championships, helping the Cougs capture their first league title in a decade. But Lopez Zariaga admitted she had low expectations heading into her state appearance at Culver High School on February 24th. Lopez Zariaga lost her first match of the day to Kami Hart of Sweet Home, a tough start to the day for the already nervous senior. But as she had all season, she rallied, winning her two next consolation matches against Roosevelt's Anastasia Bowling and Ben's Sarah Witz. She pinned Witz in only 1.25 of action and Bowling an impressive 43 seconds in. Though she lost the consolation semifinals against Cambria Funk of St. Helens and the fifth place match against Woodburn's Jasmine Lopez, Lopez Zariaga still left Culver with a sixth place overall finish, the best finish by a female wrestler in Canby school history. For the senior, Thursday's result was the culmination of years of hard work, practice, sweat, and determination. After a topsy-turvy 2020 and a barren team in 2021, Lopez Zariaga had something great to show for it. After graduation, Lopez Zariaga plans to attend Western Washington and study pre-veterinary medicine.
Okay, Tyler, I need to tell you about the latest giveaway from DirectLink.
Okay.
So I know you're not the biggest sports guy.
Not at all.
But let me paint you a little picture. Portland versus Oklahoma City in the first round of the playoffs. 10 seconds left, all tied up with the series on the line. Damian Lillard is at half court, Paul George in his face. Dame, cool as ice, lets the clock drain down to nothing, then launches this ridiculous bomb from the logo, nothing but net. and the crowd goes insane. Here, check this out.
Lillard, long range three, and it's good! At the buzzer, Damian Lillard! Are you kidding me?
Okay, I gotta admit, that's pretty cool. Can you imagine being there?
I know, right? Well, thanks to our friends at DirectLink, Canby's local reliable internet provider, you can.
I can? Yes!
Well, no, actually, you can't. But one of our listeners can.
Oh, well, okay.
That's because we're giving away 2 100-level tickets to the Blazers versus San Antonio on March 23rd.
Wait, I don't even know what that is, but that sounds so cool. Level 100 seats?
That's right. Only a dozen rows back from the court. This ticket giveaway is exclusively for our podcast listeners and readers, and you can enter to win right now at directlink.coop/canbecurrent. The giveaway will end on March 2nd, and the winner will be randomly chosen that day.
Okay, but I do have one serious question.
Okay.
Can I seriously not enter to win these tickets?
Okay, well, Tyler, all the rules are on the website. Just visit directlink.coop/canbecurrent, and good luck, everybody.
Series. Damian Lillard for 50 points. Good night.
It's back. Hosted by the Canby Rotary Club, Canby's inaugural Daddy-Daughter Dance was one of the first local events to be postponed due to the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic in March 2020. Now, 2 years later, the need for parents, kids, families, and the community to come together, reconnect, and have a little fun is greater than ever. Here's Canby Rotary President and event organizer Ray Keene.
So the Daddy-Daughter Dance is really just coming online at, I think, a really important time for the relationships that are really core in our community. When you think about opportunities to come together with a father and a daughter to connect, or other meaningful relationships, we're really open to all coming. So, you know, when those relationships are kind of when they've been hammered the way that the last couple of years have, you know, really impacted all of our relationships, I think it's really an important time for dads and daughters to be able to get together and do something that's really special.
So join us for an evening of fun, food, magic, music, and of course, dancing from 6 to 9 p.m. Saturday, March 12th at the Ackerman Center in Canby. The night will include a chocolate fountain, refreshments, arts and crafts, a photo booth, a live magic show, and other surprises that are sure to amaze and delight the little princess in your life. Tickets are $30 per couple and $10 for every additional child, with all proceeds supporting the work of Canby Rotary and its charitable efforts in our community. All are welcome at this fun, friendly, and inclusive event. For tickets or more information, visit canbyrotary.com. Joining us on the Canby Conversation today is Arby Irwin. He is a World War II Navy veteran living here in Canby. Hi, Arby.
Hi.
How are you today?
I'm fine.
Good, good. Thanks so much for being on with us today.
Talk a little slower.
Oh, okay. Arby, you are what's called an atomic veteran.
Yeah.
Can you tell us what that means?
Yeah. Just a minute. I'll get a cap and we'll be a little bit.
Sure. Oh, we got the hat here. Okay. Atomic veteran. Very cool. You veterans in your hats, I tell you. So what does that mean to be an atomic veteran for folks
well,
that haven't heard of
it? Well,
it
means quite a bit to me because I was there and saw all the stuff in the earlier atomic bombs.
Yeah.
Actually, the two that I observed and took part in was the fourth and fifth one ever detonated. They had one in New Mexico for Trinity.
Yeah.
And then the next two was in Japan. And the next two, I observed both of them and took part in it. Went back on the ship after the first bomb was dropped on July the 1st. And went back in there for just a few minutes. And they would only let me stay in there about 5 minutes. And the only ones they let back in there was the young guys.
Oh, okay.
I was just before my 19th birthday.
Yeah.
So, but some of us young ones go back in there and see the damage, and come back out, get back on the seagoing tug.
Yeah.
And they would, we'd take the clothes off. They'd give us some clothes, just ordinary clothes, and a cap, shirt, and pants, and shoes. Yeah. No, nothing else.
Now, Arby, you said that you saw the two that were dropped on Japan, or the two that came after?
No, the two that came after.
Okay, so where was that?
And on the island of Bikini in the South Pacific.
Okay. Yeah, and you said that you were just wearing normal clothes.
Well, they give us some clothes to put on before we went on there to look the damage.
Yeah.
And then after I was on there for a little bit, then I come back off, went back on the seagoing tug, and they took a hose, and we stripped down, clear to the skin.
Yeah.
Throw the clothes over in the harbor, and then they'd wash us off.
Yeah.
Then we'd put some different clothes on because there's radiation everywhere.
So they did know something about the radiation.
Well, they knew radiation, but I don't think they knew a whole lot what it does.
Yeah.
Well, they knew that it affected the people in Japan, you know, somebody, the heat or the...
Yeah.
But it was a short time later, so I don't know how much they knew about the cancer and stuff.
Right.
And then a couple of days later, I went back and looked for some more damage. I stayed a little longer. Mm-hmm. And then in about a few days, they had me and a few guys go back over and go to the ship again and open up some hatches and go down below.
Yeah.
And we could see the damage that it done down below. And my station on the ship, it was the USS Pensacola, heavy cruiser.
Yeah.
And we went clear down to the bottom where the boilers was.
Yeah.
And the pressure and the heat came down from those stacks from the bomb.
Yeah.
The bomb didn't touch the ships.
Yeah.
It was just the pressure.
Yeah.
Went down and it blew the boilers just completely apart, like you'd blow up a paper bag and...
Yeah.
And like this. And so I was on there for a few days the third time.
Yeah.
Before the second bomb was dropped.
Yeah, yeah. And it was that there just wasn't an understanding or conception of how radiation gets into your system and gets into your body. It was thought that you could just wash it off like that, or?
Well, I think they thought it would probably help.
Yeah.
Evidently washing you down, because they did wash us down.
Yeah.
They didn't. They just used water.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So I don't know how much they knew about it.
Yeah.
But anyway, they had us go down. And later on in life, I think some of people wore badges that showed radiation. But mine, we didn't have a badge or anything to show radiation.
Yeah. Yeah. So what was your... Why were you willing to do that? What was your understanding of what you were doing as far as just looking at the damage?
Well, they wanted me to go in, or us guys go in, a few young guys, and come back and tell them what we saw.
Okay.
For the damage.
Yeah.
This wasn't for the radiation.
Yeah.
If this, tell them. Okay. We'd go back and told them this was burned, this was charred, this had pressure. There was steel decking on there that just pushed it down.
Yeah.
When I was serving on there, before the bomb was dropped, I could walk through the lower deck, the second deck down, and walk straight up. I went back, and when I finally got on there after the second try, went down below a little further and walked through. I had to stoop over.
Yeah.
And it was decking this thick that the pressure had just put down on that ship.
Crumpled it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the lifeboats was just charred, just like ashes, you know.
Wow. Yeah. What did you feel seeing the destruction?
I never really felt anything physically.
Yeah.
It bothered me a little bit.
I was going to say, what did you feel emotionally or mentally?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I didn't know what the outcome would be, because I seen what the damage done.
Yeah.
And they had knew there was radiation because of the one in Japan.
Yeah.
So it was a little anxious.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. What did it feel like, though, just seeing that incredible devastation and that destruction? How did that make you feel, seeing that firsthand?
Well, it made me feel that this is something unreal, you know, the atomic bomb.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, boy, I hope it never used again, because it can just ruin the world.
Yeah.
And it just hit me then, and it still does today. I hope the leaders, you know, don't start a war, and although they did drop one back in 45,
yeah,
or dropped two of them,
yeah,
but maybe they thought that was a way to end a war, which it was.
Yeah.
You know, so it's something somebody had to make a decision on, but it made me feel kind of anxious for, you know, being in something like that and what the effects would be later.
Yeah.
But I never really felt sick or anything.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why it's so important to record and hear stories from people, like, because there's so few people that actually have seen an atomic bomb blast and seen the incredible destruction that it can...
I saw both of them. I saw both of the blasts, and both of them was just incredible.
Yeah.
You wonder how something could be made to be that powerful.
Yeah.
And you probably saw pictures of it, you know, on TV or something. When they dropped that, I was about 10 miles out on a transport.
Yeah.
They made us turn our back to the island.
Yeah.
And sit down on the deck and cover our hair, cover our eyes up.
Yeah.
And then the very instant that the initial flash went, somebody said, okay, you look. So we got just when it started.
Yeah.
I mean, we could hear it.
Yeah.
You could hear a lot of, pretty loud.
Yeah.
But I could see that cloud starting to mushroom. And it just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
And I didn't think it was ever going to stop. It just went. And colors, you wouldn't believe the colors of it.
Really?
You know, and it's just amazing.
Yeah.
And I heard a couple of the guys, you know,
What colors? Because all the photos are black and white, right?
Oh, no. One black and white.
I know, But I mean, like us who weren't there to see it, they're just...
Yeah.
All shades of red and orange.
Yeah. And it just kept going. It just kept going, you know.
Yeah.
You wondered when it was going to stop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course, the second one wasn't near that colorful, but it was different.
Yeah.
Because you could see the ocean coming up.
Oh, okay. It landed in water.
Yeah. The second one was detonated in the water.
Okay.
And come out.
Yeah.
And pushing the whole ocean right up. Wow. You could see it from 10 miles out.
Yeah. Yeah. Was there a 10 miles away, was there a blast? I mean, did you feel wind? Did you feel heat?
I don't remember they really feeling a whole lot of wind. I don't know. It seems like best I remember. And at the time, it felt like it. But my mind was always on something else. And I was sitting on a deck of a ship. So I don't know if the actual wind, I don't remember feeling anything strange about it, but
so how soon after the first blast were you there looking at the wreckage?
To the end of the wreckage, it was about about 3 days.
Okay, 3 days later you were there on site.
And I just went on for just about 5 minutes. I told us you can't stay, but about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And look things over on the deck.
Yeah.
And then we went back on the tug again.
Yeah.
And then about 2 or 3 days later, they sent us back on again and said, we open up some hatches.
Yeah.
So we got the hatches open. We could get out and went down below.
Yeah.
And it was either that visit or the next one that went down clear to the bottom. And I could see my locker down there was anchored to the inside of the bulkhead. And it tore the lockers completely loose from the bulkhead.
Yeah.
Stuff scattered everywhere.
Yeah.
And I even left a six-pack of Coca-Cola down there that I had got from a We had been over on the island a few days before. They let us go on the island for a few days.
Yeah. I hope you didn't drink it, Arby.
And then so anyway, I found where my locker was. It was tore loose, and I had my six-pack behind it, six-pack of Coca-Cola, little bottles. And I looked back here. I remembered that I'd left it there.
Yeah.
And I went back and looked, and I had six bottles that I'd left over. I had drank two of them.
Yeah.
I went back there, and there was one bottle. The three other bottles, I could not find them anywhere.
So they were glass. They would have been glass.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they got smashed.
Yeah. And I still got that bottle of Coke.
Do you really?
Well, I don't have it. I give it to my son, finally.
Okay, yeah.
I had it for a long time. I kept it wrapped up real good.
Yeah.
And I don't think it was radioactive because I had it ever since I got out.
It didn't turn green?
But it's one thing, my son, you know, he was talking about different things he wanted, you know, from my service. He said, there's one thing that I want.
Yeah.
When you get ready to get rid of it, he says, I want that bottle of Coke.
Yeah.
So he's got it. He's had it for years.
Amazing. Arby, what was your normal job as part of the Navy?
I was run the boilers.
Okay.
Work the gas or the oil that went in.
Yeah.
The lever there to open the valve.
Yeah.
Just on big levers like this.
Yeah.
And if they'd announce it to come through, we're going to make a quick turn, need more heat, you know.
Yeah.
Start those flames going and
yeah.
shooting a fire in there and get more power to
yeah.
to either turn the ship or speed up or something.
Yeah, yeah. What was that work like? Hot, cramped?
It was hot, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
It was hot.
Yeah.
And to make it worse, that was my first voyage out on the ship.
Oh, no. Yeah. Seasickness?
And there was one guy that I worked with, two other young guys.
Yeah.
One of them had been out before.
Yeah.
He wasn't real old, but he was one of the older bunch of us running the boilers. And it was him, and there was a little Mexican fella from Texas.
Okay.
And we worked, and the little fella I can't even remember his name.
Yeah.
He got seasick.
Mm.
He got so sick he couldn't even work on a boiler. So that left the two of us running from one boiler to the next.
Oh, no.
Doing this, that, and the other. And fortunately, I never got seasick.
Oh, good. Yeah.
So.
What ship were you on? Hmm? What ship?
One that I went over there, that I went back on was USS Pensacola.
Okay.
It was a heavy cruiser.
Yeah.
And, of course, then I got reassigned after that. But being over there, it was... After the second bomb, we all headed back on a troop transport ship.
Yeah.
Just packed with sailors to bring them back.
Yeah.
And, but anyway, I remember being on the little island for a few hours. Beautiful spot.
Yeah.
Beautiful place. It just... ruined it, you know. And then after that bomb, they set up some towers and had other detonations over in that area too.
Yeah.
But it's just it's something that sticks to your mind, you know. Wonder what's going to happen in the future. And I got cancer.
Yeah.
So I was diagnosed with cancer quite a few years later.
Yeah.
I've been going to the doctor, went to the VA. Now I go to one more local oncologist, and he's checking me every 6 months. He was checking me every 3 months. Now he's checking me every, but I got the cancer. First one I got was in my groin.
Yeah.
And I got to complaining about it. It was hurting. And he went in there. He felt of it and looked at it and took some pictures. He says, I think that we're going to have to go in there to see what's in there.
Yeah.
But he says, at your age, you know, I was up in my 80s by the time I was hurting real. I thought I had a hernia.
So, Tyler, Valentine's Day is coming up.
Oh, yeah.
Got any big plans with the missus?
Oh, you know it.
That's what I thought. A little candlelight, nice dinner.
Mm-hmm. Check and check.
Romantic music, champagne, and of course, books.
Wait, what?
Oh, yeah, man. Ladies love books, and books are a great gift that show you value and appreciate everything about that special someone in your life, including their mind.
Okay, I'm with you. One problem, though. What if I don't know what book she would like?
Not to worry, my friend. The Book Nook on North Grant Street in downtown Canby has you covered with their Blind Date with a Book promotion. You just pick out the genre and they take care of the rest, sending you home with your choice of a new or used pre-wrapped hardcover or paperback gem that she or he or they are sure to love.
That does sound pretty cool and romantic.
Yep. Plus, Book Nook has a fantastic selection of chocolate, candy, cards, and other gifts for all of your Valentine's needs.
And that's not all. If you're in need of a special outing on Valentine's week, look no further than Trivia Night at Wayward Sandwiches Thursday, February 17th. They're partnering with the Book Nook for an evening of romantic literature-themed trivia, awesome bookish prizes, and lots of fun.
For all things books and more, check out The Book Nook, 294 Northwest 2nd Avenue, or visit them on Facebook, Instagram, and at booknookcanby.com. And now, a message from Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes.
Hi, everyone. I wanted to take this moment to invite you personally to come and hang out with us for our end of season client event. It's a thank you to all the wonderful people we've done business with, as well as a welcome to a lot of our community. I'm doing this in partnership with Vanessa Zimmerman, Zimmerman Team at Academy Mortgage. It's just kind of our way of saying thank you. We've really enjoyed getting to know you, doing business with you, etc. We'll be outside. We're sensitive to the fact that we're in COVID, still dealing with that. So it will be spread out. People will have room to breathe and sit and walk and talk. Reckless Company, if you've never heard them before, they're awesome. They're going to be playing. We'll have TMK here. I can't wait to try the corn dog. I've been waiting like 2 years to try this corn dog. So it looks amazing, and I've heard it's amazing, and I think there's quite a following. Also, they'll have all kinds of other food. We'll have beer and cider. Everything's hosted, of course, as a thank you. Again, it's for our clients. It's for our community. We really, really want to come and celebrate. We'll have swag for you, all kinds of fun things for the kids. We hope to see you on 9/16 from 4 to 8 in the afternoon.
He went in there and he says, no, he said, I don't think so. I want to take some pictures if you're willing to go for it.
Yeah.
So I went, took x-rays. And he called a surgeon. We went right in the next few days.
Yeah.
And she operated and went in there and took a bunch of stuff out that they thought was, you know,
yeah,
the main part of it, and took it out. And it still bothers me, but I'm working on it with the physical therapy.
Yeah.
Have been for quite a while.
Yeah.
And so he worked on that, and that went on for quite a while. And then they found a spot in my stomach. All of a sudden, one day, I started bleeding in my stomach. Mm-hmm. This was probably less than six, maybe 6 months after this one.
Yeah.
And they said, well, maybe it's spread in there.
Yeah.
So they thought maybe it had some connection with this, for this. And the surgeon in Portland went in there with about a camera and looked around, and they poked four smaller holes that they could put a camera in, you know.
Yeah.
The one they operated on, and they went back in there and cleaned the place out. He was, could fell from the camera.
Yeah.
He had about four different spots he could look at the spots in there.
Yeah.
Then they went down with the instrument and took that out, so I haven't had a whole lot of trouble with my cancer, but I have trouble with my bowels and everything like this. It bothers me today. It just don't seem to work right. The system just don't work to work right. So I don't know if that had anything to do with my stomach.
Yeah.
But anyway, it affected my health. Otherwise, I would have been pretty healthy.
Yeah. How old are you now?
I'm 94.
So this was about 10 years ago when the cancer showed up?
Well, I think it was longer than that because they didn't really call it cancer. There was a VA in Portland. Yeah. He was checking my blood all the time for a few years. It's back in the 90s.
Yeah.
He was checking, and he said, my red and white blood cells, the way he stated it, he said, your red and white blood cells are not getting along.
Okay.
You know, they're fighting each other.
Yeah.
And it's been going on ever since, evidently, because my oncologist takes a whole CAT scan of this whole part of my body every time I go in, and he gives me blood test, draws blood.
Yeah.
And keeps checking on it. And then one time he went in to check, he wanted to check for a bone marrow. So they went in and stuck a needle in my back and took some bone marrow out.
Yeah. Aspiration.
Yeah. So they took that out, and that wasn't too powerful. I mean, it wasn't too good, you know, to have this needle in there and draw it out.
Right.
But I've been going to him, and so anyway, it's been going on for quite a while, part of it, so I don't really know what's going on in there, but anyway,
you think it was from the radiation. Do your doctors think it came because of your exposure?
Well, I got a letter from the oncologist, the one that operated on my groin, and the one that for the Veterans Hospital.
Yeah.
And they said this cancer could be connected with that. So I turned in for compensation.
Yeah.
And I know people that was over there on Bikini.
Yeah.
And doing the same thing I done, and they was drawing compensation so much a month.
Yeah.
And I appealed it and everything else.
Yeah.
Wrote letters, got letters, sent them in, and they said, well, I don't think it's the right kind of cancer.
So you weren't able to get service connected?
I never got anything from the government. The only thing I get is they furnish my hearing aids and my glasses.
Yeah.
That's it. And I got to pay a copay on it. I got to pay part of that.
But you have other friends that were on the ship with you, exposed to the same stuff, and were able to get service connected.
I never did see any of the rest of my close friends on there again.
Oh, okay, yeah.
They packed us up down there and come back, and I don't know if whether they're stationed on a different ship or where, but I never seen any more of my friends from the Pensacola.
Yeah.
They completely shut out.
Yeah, yeah. Are you part of any, and I don't know how many there are anymore, but were you part of any atomic veteran groups or organizations or anything like that?
No, I'm not an American Legion or Veterans of Foreign Wars. I don't belong to any of them. The only one I belong to is this one here.
Yeah.
They got in touch with me, and we used to meet over at Tigard all the time.
Atomic Veterans.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's that group like?
That was what?
What is... Tell me about this group.
Oh, there was a group of people that had similar experiences...
Yeah.
Except it wasn't on a ship, wasn't in on boats or anything.
Yeah.
But there was the ones that were like out in the desert in Nevada.
The tests.
And the tests. So these all guys were in on stuff like that, and they were called atomic veterans.
Yeah.
If they wanted to join.
So, yeah.
So I joined up with this bunch, and I get a letter every 2 months from them, or a little book.
Yeah.
And telling me what's going on.
Yeah.
And it's, there was a lot of those people. They was drawing compensation. Almost every one of them that beat over there. There wasn't a big group. It was probably, meetings. There was anywhere from 10 to 15 people, and there's all about all there was.
Yeah.
I don't know if there wasn't any more atomic veterans out there, or somebody hadn't heard of it.
Yeah.
In fact, I got one to go over there because I visited up the Veterans Hospital, mm-hmm. and I was wearing my cap one day when yeah. I went up to a visit to see my doctor.
Yeah.
And then between breaks, I went in and I sat down in the waiting room, mm-hmm. and there was a veteran sitting over there a little ways away, and he saw my cap.
Yeah.
And he looked at it, and he says, "What is that?" And I told him. He says, "Well, gosh," he says, "I was in some of those tests, you know, not that one over there," because he was yeah. younger than me.
Yeah.
And I've told him about the group.
Yeah.
And I said, "You should come and join if you took part in any yeah. of the veterans." And he went in and joined up.
Yeah.
And he went to meetings from then on till about 7, 8, 9 years ago. Then he moved to Tillamook, so it was too far to go.
Yeah.
So anyway, it was a group of guys, and we got together, and we told our stories, you know.
Yeah.
And then we'd go back and discuss it again, you yeah. know, just go back time after time, and then some of the leaders would lead us through a meeting, you know, and tell us what's developing.
Yeah.
And I still get a magazine about every 2 months.
Yeah.
And they got national officers and state officers.
Yeah.
The ex-president of the national group was Fred Schaefer from right here, down here in Staten.
I've met him, yeah.
And now he's the vice commander now, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, they got some local guys working.
Yeah.
It's national-wide. It's a whole national thing.
Yeah. Arby, when you look back, think about your service and, you know, the impact that it had on you in some ways, a physical way, being exposed to that radiation, how do you feel about your service? Are you proud of it? Do you regret it? Do you regret certain things about it?
Oh yeah, I'm proud of it, you know.
Sure.
I mean, I'm not sorry that I went in.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen a lot of stuff I'd never seen before, and it was an experience. I've seen how people lived that was in the service, you know.
Yeah.
How you worked and took orders and everything else, you know.
Yeah.
So it was an opening, you know.
Yeah.
And my mom she didn't object when I signed up to go in.
Yeah.
So went in, so just a friend of mine in high school, we was talking about it between our junior and senior year.
Yeah.
We didn't even finish high school, those two of us.
Where did you go to high school?
Hubbard.
Oh, Hubbard, yeah.
That's when the school was in Hubbard.
Yeah.
It's not
right.
Ever before North Marion was built.
Yeah. Is that where you grew up, Hubbard?
Well, a lot of my growing up was there, yeah. around the Hubbard area, but it was all outside the city limits.
Yeah.
Lived on little farms and little places out.
Yeah.
One of them is out the other side of Donald, and one of them is out the other side of Broadacres out
yeah.
there. And
yeah. So you went into the Navy with a buddy?
Yeah, we both signed up together.
How old?
And they split us up right away. Never seen him again.
How old?
I signed up just before I was 18. I signed up in July, early July of 45.
Yeah.
And went in, and they said, "Well, you got to wait a few weeks." So it was a few weeks before they called us.
Yeah.
Because the war was wrapping up.
Yeah.
It was over pretty quick after that.
That was 45?
45.
Yeah. What month?
I think I signed up at 45. I don't know what day.
Okay.
In 1945.
Yeah.
And then a few weeks later, they called us up, and we went into Portland. They got us all ready to go and told us to go home, pack our stuff, and reports to somewhere.
Yeah.
Then we got on a, you know, in fact, I got part of a ride down there. I had to go to San Diego.
Yeah.
I got a ride part of the way to San Diego with a truck driver to get down there. They didn't even ship me down there.
Had to pay your own way.
Yeah, so anyway, I had to make my way down there, and I got down there and went through training in San Diego.
Okay. Yeah.
That's where I went through training in.
Yeah. So you went in not knowing, obviously, you know, what was going to happen as far as the radiation that you were exposed to.
No.
Had you known, would you have done it anyway?
No, I hadn't talked to anybody about it.
But if you had known that's what you were signing up for, would you have still served or no?
Well, if I knew what I was signing up for, I would have probably still signed up, knowing what I know now and what I knew then.
Yeah.
But when we went over there and I got split up with my buddies, they get split up. Would come back on a different ship,
yeah,
and never seen them anymore, and I never seen any of them. I've never met any of them back again.
Yeah,
and but yeah, I would probably consider doing it again, but I might hesitate a little more than what it was.
Right,
but it's just like a lot of young guys back then. This war was going on; it was horrible, and it'd been going on for years in Europe and in the Pacific. And, you know, young guy, well, I'll go in and do my part.
Yeah.
Go in and see if I can save the world, you know.
Yeah.
But as far as never a minute goes by that I don't think about stuff in the service connected with the bomb.
Yeah.
And like I said, I hope it never comes to that where they really turn that stuff loose.
Yeah.
They got so much dangerous stuff now anyway.
Yeah.
It's just going to... and there's so many leaders out there that are just anxious to cause trouble.
Yeah.
So,
well, Arby, thank you so much for taking time out to talk to us, and thank you for your service to our country.
Thank you. And thank you. I appreciate it.
Are you a healthcare hero? Do you want to become one? Are you looking for a position where you are valued, your time is your own, and you have ample opportunity for growth? Marquee companies at Hope Village in Canby, Oregon offers all of that and more. They are currently hiring nurses, caregivers, CNAs, and enrolling students in their free CNA course. From competitive wages and up to $25,000 tuition reimbursement to flexible schedules and the opportunity to make a positive impact on someone's life, Marquee at Hope Village is the right place for you. Take your career to the next level and apply now to become a valued team member at Marquee at Hope Village in Canby. To learn more or apply today, text CURRENT, that's CURRENT, to 888-906-3432.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears, even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? Or that baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Canby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Canby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yep. Heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Canby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Canby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Canby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City, or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net.
Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden, so a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Can Be by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Can Be is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.